resolve, and sure grittiness.
It starts with an attitude. We need swagger, okay? Regardless of what happens out there, doesn't matter. Keep your swagger.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Podcast. We are your hosts, TJ, Zach, and Raj.
Hey there.
Hey.
It's good to be back. How was your guys' break?
I got back about half an hour ago.
Camping.
Fantastic camping.
Nice.
Deers. All kinds of wildlife. Deers and beers. It's good.
I sprained my right thumb a little bit ago, and I'm right-handed. So that's been interesting.
Hell of a break. Well, it's time to get back in the swing of things. So we are Five Hole. You guys can find us on Twitter at FHF Hockey. You can join the Fantasy Hockey Discord. Next week, we got the Dynasty Series coming up. So these episodes we're going to be doing here, we're going to do like a year in review, just talking about the year as it's happened. And then we're going to dive straight into the Dynasty Series, which actually is it's going to be fun. We do it every year. This year, we've got regulars coming back like Scott Wheeler, Mitch Brown, Tony Ferrari, Dave Hall, Will Scouch. Yeah, so that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be talking to them about, no way, Colorado just tied it up.
No.
I'm on a two-minute delay here.
I wanted to say something, but I kept it quiet. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, so it's about 10:30 p.m. I'm running on like a two-minute delay, so Zach, thank you very much for not the spoiler alert there. But last year we did top 10 takeaways, things we learned from this season. And we're going to do the same thing this year. We're going to look at the year in review. We're going to talk about the playoffs. You know, if anybody's doing anything to their ADP for next year, whether it be, you know, positive or negative. And then we're going to get into the top 10 lessons that we learned this year that we're going to take into next year. Let's get right into it. I mean, we're watching the Colorado Edmonton series right now. Game three, 6 minutes left in the third. What are you guys like? This has been a good series, not for Edmonton, but it's been fun.
Well, all I know is we just watched Leon Draisaitl miss a completely open net. Mm-hmm. And then less than a minute later of game time, the Avalanche score to tie it up. How large is that looming? When we were just talking about if they lose this game, that's what everybody's going to see as the season.
They're going to watch it all off season.
Yeah.
Just that play.
Yeah, he's going to get shit on even though he's the only reason they're there. In the first place,
they're more than welcome to trade him to Philly.
They should. Yeah, he's washed up.
I'll take him.
Evan Bouchard on the top power play.
Fuck yeah,
which is epic. I'm really excited about that one. We've been waiting for a while. And what's Barrett got? He's got like 4 points in the entire playoffs,
which is crazy considering they've scored a million goals.
He's allergic to points. It's I don't know. Oh, yeah. What do you think about the New York Rangers-Tampa series? That one's, like, I know the New York Rangers are a good team, but I thought that this was just the year that they were like, okay, like, we're serious again. But now they're in the conference final. Like, I expected, you know, maybe win a round. I did not see the second round happening. They're surprising me, is basically what I'm getting at. And now they're, you know, giving Tampa a run for their money. What do you guys think of this series? What do you think of the New York Rangers?
I'm actually super rooting for the New York Rangers.
I hate that. I hate that because I am too.
I do too, but like...
so uncomfortable.
At the same time, there's players on that team that I like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's Mott, players on that team that
Tyler Mott, I
do dig. So, you know, they came out, they beat Carolina, and in all honesty, I feel like Carolina just... they weren't going in the right direction going into the playoffs. They beat Boston because they were just straight up a better team than Boston. Boston couldn't hack it with, you know, just one line trying to win an entire series. But the Rangers are scoring points. They're winning the right way, and I love the way they're playing Tampa Bay. And I'm tired of seeing Tampa Bay win.
Me too. It does feel a bit Groundhog Day-ish.
And Shesty. I like Shesty.
Yeah, Raj, what about Shesty?
He's doing just fine. He's going to lose to Vasilevsky and be proven as the second best goalie, but he's great. He's great. I had the Rangers making it this far and losing in six is what my bracket has. So I'm not actually surprised by the Rangers. I don't know why we all underestimated them, but then you look at their roster and they have a great team. I just hate it. It's a thing. And yeah, I've talked some shit about Shesty at certain times, mm-hmm. but he's doing very good.
I don't know why.
He's very
I take it personally. I'm not a Rangers fan, but I'm taking it personally.
I know people get upset about Shesty. He's very good. He is very good and he's doing very good. I'll say that. He's won them a few games. I think even the game they just lost, he had like 50 saves or something like that. So he's good, but we have lots to talk about with goalies pretty quick here. So.
Yeah, true enough, true enough. All right, other headlines. Most recently today, Boston fired Bruce Cassidy. Oh, man, Colorado's up.
Are they?
That really? Just happened. Yeah, they're up now.
Mikko Rantanen.
Hot damn.
Five hole.
Hot damn.
Mike Smith just got five hold with 5 minutes left.
Brutal. So anyway, Boston fired their coach today. They joined the Flyers, the Golden Knights, the Red Wings, the Stars, the Jets. Chicago, do they have a coach? They had an interim head coach. So did the Panthers, the Oilers, and the Canadiens re-signed Martin Saint-Louis for 3 years. So there's a lot of teams that don't have coaches, a lot of systems that are going to change. The only one that has hired somebody is the New York Islanders. They have Lane Lambert. Now, he's been with Barry Trotz since 2011. He was head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals in the AHL, the Nashville affiliate. They finished first, but they were middle of the pack in goals for per game. I think they were like 14th in the league. I don't know if I'm reading too much into this. He's been palling around with Barry Trotz since 2011. Do we have another low-scoring, boring Trotz doppelganger? Somebody that is a new voice that might play the kids a little bit more. Maybe there's something going on. I don't see Lou Lamoriello being like, hey, play rookies more. But I don't know. It seemed really strange to replace Barry Trotz with Lane Lambert, whose coaching style is very similar.
So what you're saying is he's not Barry Trotz, he's Baby Trotz?
Barnabas.
The state of the hockey in with the Islanders, it seems like a terrible business decision to have another boring team right now. They need to get people in the stands. So I would be very surprised if they hired him with the anticipation of another defensive, like 2-1 kind of hockey team. I hope for the whole NHL that it's not like that.
They did hire him.
I know.
And I mean, Friedman talked about something on 32 Thoughts that I thought was pretty interesting. Barry Trotz got fired almost immediately after exit interviews. So you wonder if maybe the room was just not on his side anymore. Maybe, you know, Matt Barzal at third line center wasn't working. So they tried to change something, i.e. the head coach. But basically the bottom line is here, most people are agreeing that Matt Barzal is going to be the major beneficiary here. Maybe somebody like Noah Dobson, if something happens to that power play without Barry Trotz. So fingers crossed for some exciting hockey out of the island. Bruce Boudreau,
yeah,
back as the Canucks head coach. You're pretty stoked about that one?
Oh, God. Well, how? There's nothing to talk about. He saw the team before and after. It wasn't 100% him, but he
didn't hurt.
He got the guys to play the way they were supposed to be playing and probably better. The only guy who really played well before and kind of all along was JT Miller, because he's just always exactly the same. But yeah, that's so awesome. So awesome to have Boudreau back.
What do you think we get out of Miller next year?
Same as this year.
I'll take the under.
I'd say within 5%, I think. I think this is the trajectory he's been on his whole career was leading to where he did this year. And
oh, the Oilers come back and tie it up.
Yep.
This game Zach rules. Cassian.
Zach.
Hell.
No.
Cassian. Sorry. Yes. We're doing like live fucking.
This sucks so bad because I want to say something.
Your patience is very admirable.
And these goals keep happening one after another, and I just got to freaking sit here.
I'm just cheering for more hockey. I don't want it to be a sweep because I want a longer series. That's all.
Well, I would like to see these two teams play a couple more times. That wouldn't be so bad.
A couple of contracts have been signed. Brian Rust re-signs in Pittsburgh. Team-friendly deal. Mark Giordano re-signs in Toronto. Very team-friendly deal. Korpisalo signs 1 year in Columbus. Mark Stone has back surgery. Boston, I mean, they fire their head coach. Everybody is broken. Marchand and McAvoy both out 6 months. Grizzlick 5 months. Mike Riley, who I have third in line for the power play, 3 months. He could be your quarterback one going into the year. Bergeron maybe retiring. Think about it. Until American Thanksgiving, what do you guys think about Pasternak? He's going to be all alone on that power play with like Charlie Coyle.
I'd be fine with trying to trade him right now.
So what, you're talking dynasty now?
Pasternak name. Yeah. Or even a keeper league. If you have a keeper league, say, yeah, I'll trade your Pasternak for your keeper.
Is that because you think his price is low, or are you actually excited about what he could be doing?
I want to get what I can for the Pasternak name, because I don't think that it's going to be good next year. I think that they're on a downhill trajectory, and you can see that the past couple of years. Now, yes, they still made the playoffs and all that jazz, but they're at the point where you're making it to the playoffs, but you're getting bounced. You know what I mean? You're getting bounced out the club.
That just happened.
You know what I mean? You're getting Jazzy Jeffed, and next is just missing the playoffs. And so right where they are, they're just about to be in the worst spot you can be. Just outside the playoffs is not somewhere you want to be.
I do think this year was beginning of the end.
In our preseason this year, when you were talking about it, I called this to be the end of Boston. Yep. And I think I was about a year behind, because this year seems like the end of Boston. Did they ever just stop on a dime and retool everything? So yeah, if Pasta's selling low, I'd buy Pasta if people are giving up on him. I mean, even when he was down, he doesn't depend on Marchand and Bergeron. So I think he'll be a little less on the PP, but he's also incredible. And the only player there. And when he was playing on the second line with Taylor Hall and the rotating other wing, I mean, it was performance was fine. I have a feeling some people are going to be selling low on him.
A third of his points were on the power play.
That's probably going to go down, but
that's my biggest worry.
I don't think he's going to suffer as much as it seems like he's going to, but those power play points will suffer a bit.
What do you guys think the dynasty outlook is? Is it sell time right now? Get out before the rug gets pulled, or do you think Pasternak is somebody that can carry a team?
I don't think he can carry a team, but I think he's good enough to carry himself on a bad team.
I think he could too. Yeah, he could be a bit of a Jack Eichel there.
You can't get better than the perfection line, really. Like, that's one of the best lines in a long time. So he's going to suffer. I just don't think it's going to be as bad as it seems, is all.
Yeah, I don't see him. He's not going to be Jake DeBrusque on the perfection line, you know? Jake DeBrusque might be the only hockey player in the league that doesn't see better production when he's with them.
And you know what? His cap hit is really not that bad.
He's about to get paid, though, isn't he? I think he's about to get paid.
All those guys had really nice contracts, didn't they?
And then McAvoy happened. All right, moving on. So Boston's kind of screwed. I don't know if they're going for Connor Bedard here, but this year Canadians get the first overall draft pick in Montreal, which is either rigged or poetic, and New Jersey gets another top three pick, which is either rigged or poetic.
It's bullshit.
But outside that, man, these playoffs have been something else. Like, Tampa Toronto was an amazing series. Calgary and Edmonton was amazing. I'm enjoying this one, the Colorado Edmonton game right now. Like, this is a really good series. A lot of really good hockey. I think the only boring ones have been the Carolina games.
Carolina, and I mean, you knew what was going to happen with the Colorado-Nashville series. That was just a foregone conclusion, the way Sutter put it, right?
And if you are a wildcard team, I sure as hell don't want to play Colorado in the first round, because it's going to be a waste of 8 days.
Yeah.
I, like, missed all of those games, too. It was like I blinked, and, like, there was a point in the playoffs I actually had to think about who Colorado played in the first round, because I couldn't remember.
It happened so quick.
They just had a first round bye. Oh, that's right.
Felt bad for Saros.
What did he get? Like, one game? It was Rittich for a while. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they would have gotten one game had Saros played, but
I don't think so.
999 times out of 1,000, they get beat.
Yeah, Colorado's looking pretty unstoppable at the moment.
So we're not going to do like a full deep dive on breakouts and busts from this last year, but I wanted to know, like, who your biggest breakouts and who your biggest busts and maybe even bounce backs. That sometimes I put with breakouts. I have Timo Meier here. That one's more of a bounce back than it is a breakout, because we did see it before. But who was your biggest bust this year?
how about all of Philly? Particularly Carter Hart, obviously. But I mean,
now why didn't I put that on the list?
No, I mean, I think that's a pretty self-explanatory one. I think even I was high on Carter Hart, and he was looking so good, and the team as a whole. But obviously, I think there's better to come from Carter Hart. I don't think he's a lifelong bust, but it was a tough year.
Better hope not. This team better not ruin him.
Yeah. Because I think I like his outlook, as did everyone, and I think he looked like he was legit and not just a hype machine. He seemed like he was really good.
Well, if it's one thing Philly's got this year, it's excuses, which we're going to lean on heavily. Like Couturier played 29 games. Ellis played like 4. Keith Yandel was on our team. You know, it was one bad hand after another here in Philly. But, you know, I do want to see what the team looks like fully healthy, like Couturier, Hayes, Frost down the middle, you know, Lawton or whoever's our 4C at that point. But, you know, I don't expect playoffs or anything, but I don't want to be in the lottery next year, you know? Or actually, I do. Bedard.
I think it says a lot about how much Couturier means, like defensively, right? I think he's just a great player that doesn't always get the due he's deserved. But like, you know, they had more problems than just him out, but I think that's a huge deal. Like, I think he's an awesome player.
He was having a tough year too. He was having a really tough year. Like shooting percentage was shit. He was, you know, we always said he was super consistent around 80 points, 75, 80, something in that range. And this year, I think he was on pace for like 60. Brutal. And like our defensemen sucked. Get this. Shane Gostisbehere had more points than any defenseman on the Flyers.
That's painful.
The guy that we paid to send to Arizona. Yeah. If you just want like a screen cap, a cliff notes of how it is to be a Flyers fan, that happened. Zach, you got one queued up?
I'm going to go with a fellow Canadian. I'm going to go with Cole Caulfield. Now, he didn't end up too bad, but man, did it start out really bad at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Between him and Nick Suzuki. Now, Nick Suzuki really, you know, muddled up a really good season. You know what I mean? He actually kind of came out and turned it on, and I feel like it, you know, was the catalyst for a lot of those points that Caulfield was on. But we saw connection between the two of them. So you thought it was going to roll over into next year. So I know that Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield they had to have been drafted often as a pair. You know what I mean? If you got one, you're looking for the other because you saw that connection, and it just didn't work out this year. So you have to think that Cole Caulfield is going to, you know, drop way down the boards. I could even see him, you know, possibly not getting drafted in some leagues. But, you know, I think that he'll actually be a good person to look at this year because you're going to be able to get him really cheap, and I think he'll bounce back.
The nice thing about him, as soon as Martin Saint-Louis came in, he was an entirely different player, like not even close to the same. Like the goals were unstoppable. At one point, I think he had like 11 goals in 11 games or something, just absolutely nutsy. But he really was. He was a different player.
That was another situation, sort of like the Boudreau situation, where they had those young players, you know, same as Vancouver had. They were just shit, like absolute shit. And then the new coach showed up and just whatever it was, it clicked with a few of those Montreal guys, same as it did in Vancouver. And it was just like, how is that even possible to go from so shitty to so good? Man, it sure did. And it's cool. I love that it's Martin St. Louis. I'm a little skeptical on how good of a coach he actually is, but...
I believe he could be a perfectly fine coach.
Well, that's what they said about Gretzky as well, right?
Oh, well, I don't know. He got 35 points in 38 games out of Caulfield, so I think he is both a bust and a breakout, which is like crazy. I was going to say Elias Pettersson for the same reason. Like, first half of the year, sucked. Second half of the year, awesome. Yeah. And Caulfield fits the same mold, like really tale of two seasons with him. But that first half, he got sent down to the AHL fast.
Yeah, there was something going on, obviously, in Montreal all around, and they were clearly after this number one pick.
I got a guy that really doesn't need much explanation, other than he kind of benefited the same way under Marty St. Louis, but Jeff Petrie. I mean, he was last year, two seasons ago now, Norris conversations, fuck, like 42 points in 55 games, which is killer. And then this year, a point every 3 games, brutal. But under Marty, his season changed. started getting points again. He ended the season really strong, 23 points in 36 games under St. Louis. In his last 20 games, 14 points. So right along the same pace, but just really coming back to form. So I have a little bit of hope for Petrie next year. I know he asked for a trade, and maybe that was something to do with Ducharme. So maybe he's happy. We're gonna see some things next year. But he was probably my biggest bust. Him and another guy, Dougie Hamilton, who just never really seemed to take power play one.
Now, what was interesting to me about Petrie too is like he was on such a good trajectory. Like he just kept getting better and better and better. And then Weber was out, and you're like, here's his big break. He's the guy, and it just...
I thought so, too.
Did not work for a bit, that's for sure.
Both Mark Stone, Max Pacioretty, I have both of them as busts. I mean, it's injury busts, but they're guys that get injured a lot. So that's a risk you take with these guys.
Another guy I had as a bust was obviously Leonard as well, right? It's kind of... Vegas as a team was a bit of a butt this year.
Yeah. You know, with their injuries, like they couldn't get healthy all at the same time. So it was a rough year. I had Matt Barzal. That's going to be hopefully a bounce back next year. But do you guys got any other busts or breakouts? We can move over into breakouts.
I mean, other than Blake Wheeler, I'm good.
As far as like, I guess it's a bounce back, but it's hard not to talk about Johnny Gaudreau when you're talking about bounce back, breakouts. I mean, they took a while off in Calgary. They're back, man, but he's looking sharp.
He's back.
Yeah, and then they took a couple of games off here at the end of the year, too.
Yeah, that was tough. I still think Calgary is the better team.
Yeah, so do I.
But just looking at both of their goalies, like the goalies took the nights off. Markstrom had a really rough series.
Like, I actually really wanted to see Calgary play the Avalanche.
Yeah, that would have been just as good a series. Mike Smith is just not the guy. He's not the guy.
Shocker. And another one in Calgary, right? They didn't have Tanev to help deal with the high scoring offense, and he's all of a huge chunk of their defense.
Sturdy guy.
Yeah, he's just defense, right? Like his face and hair goes in front of shots, and without that, you could just see them panic on D. Like, oh shit, we don't have him, and we got to deal with the best two players in the world, and they're both record-breaking paces. And it wasn't Markstrom's fault, I don't think.
Imagine that from a Calgary standpoint. Like, one series you're against McDavid and Draisaitl, the next series you're against McKinnon and Rantanen. That's a tough road. That would have been a really tough road.
Whatever team was coming out of the East would have won. Might be what happens now, except, you know, nobody's going to stop the Avalanche, most likely.
I have four names here that I want you guys to rank in order from most believable breakout to least believable breakout. It's Timo Meier, which, you know, could be a bounce back. Chris Kreider, who scored like 45 tip-in goals. Matt Duchene, who played good hockey. And Moritz Seider, who was in his first year.
I'll go first, and I think I have the right answer. Chris Kreider, number one, believable.
Most believable?
Yeah.
Wrong answer.
Yeah, I'm against you already.
I'll put Timo Meier second, but I can't put him first because I still don't like Timo Meier.
Big news if you put, him second.
But no, Chris Kreider has always had a really good shot, can score goals, and he has some help around him this year. So you know what I mean? It's taken, you know, some of the pressure off. He can play his game, and he can play really fast with these young kids. I like that. So I'm putting Timo Meier at number two, even though I don't like him. Moritz Seider at number three, because I could believe that, you know, any young player is going to have a breakout. But I thought Matt Duchene was fucking done. So, like, that's why he is number four. Because it was the least believable. You could have told me, hey, this person you've only heard of like twice, they're going to have a breakout this year. And I would have been like, okay. And somebody would have said, hey, Matt Duchene's going to have a breakout this year. And I would have said, I'll bet you, and I will hang him up after this year if that happens. Like, I wouldn't have put money on that in the smallest amount.
All right, Raj, I'm going to give you a shot at the right answer here.
That was the right answer. You're welcome.
Because we haven't heard it yet.
I don't buy Kreider for a second. he's not the third best goal scorer in the NHL, regardless of who's on his line, I don't think. I'm high on Meyer. Depending on how you want to rank it, I 100% believe Mo Sider is for real.
Me too, yeah.
I think he is one of the top 5D in the league going forward. I do. He was on a shit team, and he did well. And he's not all points.
Oh, yeah.
He's good at all of it, and Detroit's only getting better. So I'd put him maybe one or two, but I put Meyer right up there as well. I'd put Kreider down at the bottom.
So the right order is Moritz Seider, Timo Meyer, Chris Kreider, Matthew Shane. Chris Kreider had more power play goals this year than he's ever had power play points.
It's awesome.
I feel like him and Duchesne all year, I was like, this isn't real.
Yeah, Duchesne was so low on my list, I forgot to even mention him as I was talking, because he doesn't even deserve to be on a team, I don't think.
I think Kreider's really good, yeah. Really, really good. And, you know, having him here at three is not, I'm not saying he's bad or he's going to come crashing to earth or anything. It's just, I don't see 50 goals.
No, I don't see 50 goals coming again, but he could score 40 goals.
I don't see 40. I don't see
he 40. Could score 40, for sure.
38.
26 of them were on the power play.
Like, in all honesty, I thought that Matt Duchesne retired until he started scoring goals.
40. Year. He was the first 40-goal scorer in Predators history. And then Forsberg did it, like, right behind him. So they had two 40-goal scorers this year, which has never happened to the Predators ever. Forsberg's going on the free agent market. So I'm a little worried about Josi. But, again, he's going to be he'll be the keystone to it all. He'll be the one. Everything goes through him. But that's who I got. So I like Seider, Meyer, Kreider, then Duchesne.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
So how about guys that are in the playoffs right now who have either found their way up your draft charts or down your draft charts? Zach, you and I both have Evander Kane on here, who's just been unreal. He's scoring goals left and right. Oh, wow. Yep, there it is, the sweep.
Oh, well,
they're challenging it, obviously.
Are they? Well, you got to. What are you going
to
do?
He's trying to say his stick was above the crossbar, I'm guessing. It's the only thing he could possibly be saying. Which it doesn't look like it is. Oh, maybe it is above, actually. No, yeah, he tipped it out of the air. Mike Smith stopped it, and he put the rebound back. But they called it a goal on the ice, so my guess is they're going to stick with the goal on the ice.
What a play. Is that Lekkonen?
Well, speaking of guys who have done well in the playoffs.
Lekkonen, yeah.
Right?
Pretty much everybody in the Colorado Avalanche. The only person I don't like going into next year or, you know, Dynasty Outlook or something is just Andre Burakovsky. He's been getting scratched left and right this whole playoffs. Like I think he's gotten scratched like three or four times now. Not good. Like I still think he's probably a top six option regular season if nothing changes. But if they're not relying on him now and, you know, they got him healthy scratched, that's tough to... And
I don't understand because he's awesome.
He is good. He's maybe really good. I don't know if he's not playing enough good defense or what the problem is, but...
Especially with Kadri being out, how would you not want that extra goal scoring? I don't get it. Now, I understand that JT Compher is playing fucking fantastic, too. JT Compher is, what, third on the team in scoring in the playoffs or something like that?
Colorado in the Stanley Cup. Tyson Barrie has stock falling as well. Didn't hit the top power play here in the last game of the Oilers season. He only had 4 points in 16 games. Not good. And they finally made the switch to Bouchard, so I wonder if that carries over to next year.
Might as well.
Yeah, that's that. I mean, that could be huge. Just a late round pick that could really help you in your redrafts. That would be incredible. What about up? Anybody else for up?
So we, you know, quick one over Evander Kane. I did say I had Kadri on here. You know, he had a fantastic season, as everyone knows. You know what I mean? And then also was kicking ass in the playoffs until he got knocked out last game. You know, we'll see if he comes back at all. I already brought up Shesterkin earlier. You know, number one, he won the Vezina. He is also currently beating the best goalie in the world. He's winning against Vezzy. We'll see if they stay like that. Last up for stock rising, though, I got Filip Hedl.
Decent. He's been having unreal playoffs.
I got Filip Hedl. And you know, it's because of the playoffs, because he has really stepped up his game. And this is how I'll put it. And I'm not saying it's going to be, you know, that in the future, but what drew me to Brian Rust in the beginning was every year I would see him play okay in the regular season, and he wouldn't really get put in the position to, you know, achieve. He was always on the third or the fourth line, but then the playoffs, he would come out, they would put him with some different people. He would get, you know, a different look, and he would just blow people out of the water. He was scoring goals left and right. He was getting points all over the place, and he did it like a couple of years in a row. Filip Hedl did the same thing. I mean, he, you know, he only had, you know, a couple of points and stuff in the regular season, was only seeing about 13 and a half minutes time on ice, and that's still all he saw in the playoffs, but he has 9 points in 16 games in the playoffs. That's half of what he had in the regular season. Yeah. He has almost as many goals in the playoffs as he does in the regular season. That's big time.
Yep.
So he's really stepped it up. And I just like the way he's playing. Every time you watch these Rangers games, you're going to hear Filip Hedl's name a ton of times. Putting people into the boards. He's getting the puck away. He's taking these shots. And that's the whole thing. He's actually shooting at an 18.4% clip in the playoffs, which is kind of scary considering he has never done anything like that before, ever.
Definitely making a name for himself here in the playoffs. So I wonder if that's going to be troublesome next year. All right, let's get into the 10 lessons. Zach, you're up first, man, talking about exactly what you're talking about is watching hockey.
It is. My first lesson is watch hockey actively. The way I see it is there's active and passive viewership. Passive viewership is you're just sitting there, you're watching the game, you're following the puck. And there's nothing wrong with that, and I do that most of the time too, unless I want to kind of really kind of hone in on a certain player, and I'll watch them without the puck. I'll watch what they do after the play and where they're looking and, you know, the decision making. But I want you to notice those small players that players make or even don't make. Was it a good idea? Did they, you know, only make the play because it was the best play available, or it was the only play available? It's all those, you know, dumb little shits. It's the outlet passes. It's the hit off the boards, you know what I mean? Just to tip it to another player. When you watch these little things, I always say they beget points. Let's take a look at the Panthers here. Panthers were the best team on the rush this past year. That's because Mackenzie Weegar and Aaron Ekblad are fantastic breakout players. They're getting those breakout passes from the defensive zone, and they're scoring points on the rush. The Panthers were the best at that this year. They were the best team on the rush this year. It starts in the defensive zone, and it starts because of those little plays. You don't think about those little breakout tips, you know what I mean? But it gets a puck out, and it turns into a goal. It's all the little things you got to watch. So that's what I want you to do. I think you should watch hockey more actively.
What I like about that is what you're suggesting is what the coach does. And if the coach is seeing good things from a certain player that you're scouting, whether it be on the waiver wire, your watch list, somebody else's team that you want to trade for or something, watching hockey is the first indication of better time on ice. Now, if we're talking about somebody like Filip Hedl, you know, doing all the right things, next year he could be getting a top six role if those good things turn into good habits, turn into good playing. So I'm right there with you. You know, score sheet only says so much, but you watch a guy that's being smart. That's what the coach sees. That's what the coach wants. Higher up in the lineup, they get you more time on ice. They get you more points, more shots, everything we're looking for. So I like that one. Raj, man, you have spent these last 6 weeks doing like a thesis.
I did a project. Yeah. So all my lessons kind of are going to revolve around that, which was a lot about drafts. I went back and analyzed. I started with our listener leagues, and then I reached out and got a bunch of info from altogether 23 leagues, trying to focus around pretty standard setup, not exactly the same, but 12 to 16 team leagues and with pretty normal settings. I tried to avoid some of the funkier gimmick leagues that I also like to join, but are silly. One thing I came up with here, actually, before I say that, I'm going to release all the info to the patrons, all the spreadsheets I put together in the next couple of days here. So if you're a patron, take a look for that. But the first one here was draft position. When we're getting ready to draft, which I think is basically everybody's favorite part of fantasy, it's always, what's my draft position? I got to get first overall, blah, blah, blah. And draft position does make a difference. I mean, I went through a fair chunk of leagues there, and there is some common things in the draft position, and it's absolutely not what people are usually panicked about. Out of the 23 leagues, not a single winner drafted first overall.
Surprising.
Question here. Do you think that's because Connor McDavid sucks, or is it because there's 24 picks in between?
I think it's more the latter, because the jury's out. I don't think Connor McDavid sucks. He's still young. We'll see, but I think he's going to be okay. So I think it's the gap, right? And that's common across all these leagues. Like the most successful draft position by quite a bit was fifth overall. And by success, I was going by the most wins, but also the most top three finishes. Because, you know, you can always fluke out and get bounced in the playoffs for bad luck. But overall, it was very clear that number five overall was the best overall. And the next best spots were four and six. So that is a pretty clear indicator. Like the middle of the draft tends to be the best. Oddly enough, there was a lot of winners who drafted ninth, but the turns, no bueno. Very poor results for people on the turn. So whether it's drafting one or two or drafting, you know, in the last 11 or 12 out of a 12 team league, those teams had very little success. So there was enough leagues there that it was pretty substantially evidenced.
It's crazy, man.
I wouldn't panic if you don't get first overall. In fact, I'd kind of be happy about it.
Okay, so my first is, I want to speak to the analytics crowd, the guys that look at rate stats. And I'm one of them, right? Like, I like my per 60s. I like my, you know, expected goals, this, that, and the other thing. They're good indicators, but they don't paint a whole picture. Now, individual expected goals, I'm just going to put it out there, it's not a predictive stat. It's a composite stat that you can use to explain past behavior. Now, expected goals could start to paint a picture for predictive. You know, you can start to use it with a big enough sample size, but the time you get a big enough sample size, it's usually too late. So you can determine bad luck, good luck, but then, you know, by the time it starts to even out, it's, you know, three seasons down the road. So expected goals are good, but not great. So my lesson here is the per 60 stats don't mean shit unless you're getting time on ice. You know, we're thinking about Jacob Vrana, you know, a couple years ago in Washington, when he finally got a shot uptick that was paired with more time on ice with some top power play time while Kuznetsov won on the second power play. Guys like Oliver Wahlstrom is getting a ton of airtime and, you know, attention paid to him because he's like, you know, the next Andre Kache. He's got all these fucking, you know, per 60 shots. But then you start to see, and I don't want to paint Oliver Wahlstrom in a bad light here, but when you're only playing like, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 minutes a night, it's easy to sprint, right? These guys that are playing 18, 19 minutes a night are more long distance runners. So it's easy for Ollie to go out there and just shoot the puck nonstop, running around like a crazy man when he's only playing 12 minutes a night. He starts to get that time on ice that we're all rooting for. There's a chance that those per 60 stats could stay there, but there's also a chance that it could get diluted by this extra time on ice. Now, maybe it goes down a little bit because he's learning to long distance run or have a little bit of that stamina, or maybe he's that guy. Maybe he's going to be a 6-7 shots a game kind of guy. But, you know, you look at Andre Kasha, who got intermittent top six time, usually saw a drop in rate stats because of that extra time. Again, the way I look at it is it's easy to sprint a short distance, but you can't really sprint for a whole mile unless you're an animal. So maybe Ollie's an animal.
It's got to come back to Vancouver for me, but that's the Jake Virtanen syndrome, right? Remember when he was like
right, yeah,
killer, but it also tends to mean if you're playing less minutes, you're usually playing third or fourth line. Whereas when you get bumped up to the bigger minutes, you also tend to face heftier defense. So, it's a good indicator. But I like what you put there about putting those players on your watch list. It's not a definite indicator for sure.
So I mean, as soon as you see these guys get that time on ice uptick, like one of our favorite guys is Craig Smith, and he's one of the guys that sometimes being the key word, pays off on these crazy good rate stats. So. Wait for the time on ice, then you can make the ad or the stream or whatever. Zach, you're up next, buddy.
All right, next up, I got trust your instincts. And what I mean by that is if you feel like something is right, then do it. Trust your instincts. Like every year I draft, you know, players that you might say are not worth drafting. And it turns out they are. And if they're not, you drop them, whatever. Or players that, you know, I might take too high for your opinion. If you want to go get somebody, go get it. Now, I'm not saying that you should draft Jason Robertson number two overall, but I'm just saying, you know, follow your personal draft board. And that's kind of like even like my 2A here. Make a damn draft board so that you have something to go along with. Have a backup plan. That's what I mean by trust your instincts. Pick out players that you want to look at, you know, the rounds you kind of want to get them, because something is going to go wrong. 100% of the time you make a draft board for yourself, it's going to get fucked up. You know, you think about when you want to draft a certain player and you try to stick to it, do it. And the whole thing is, I feel like it's one of those things. Remember like those multiple choice questions, you know, most of the time C would be the answer, but it's like, they always said, hey, whatever you think your first thing is, pick it. Because when you go back and you change C to B, you're going to be wrong.
Gut instinct, yeah.
So a lot of times, like, I'll take, like, the numbers into account, and I'll take everything into account, but there's just some days where, you know, you're like, you know what? I think Zach Stanford's going to get a fucking goal today. I don't know why. I'm picking up Zach Stanford.
Some days you're gonna text me in the middle of the night that Kubalik's going to get four goals, and then he does.
Yeah.
And then he does. Yeah. It happens.
That was technically in the middle of the night, but like, yeah, it was at like 4 a.m. or something. Said, hey, Rog, this is going to happen today.
I think that's a great note that goes along with your first note. Like, if you watch a lot of hockey, you can trust your instincts. If you're watching games and your instincts are probably going to be good, and I think that's absolutely bang on. Like, I can't tell you how many times you do the swap and then you swap the player out, put a guy on your bench, and then he scores four goals. You're like, why the fuck didn't I just go with what I had the first time? Trust your guts, man.
Trust your guts.
Trust your guts. Gut check.
Raj, baby, you're up next.
Well, more about drafts and reviewing the drafts. There was a lot going on in our Discord conversations recently about when should you draft D versus, there's a lot of talk this year about when to draft goalies and when do you draft forwards and that kind of thing. Like, what I found when I was going back over the winning teams here, 60% of winning teams drafted their first D in round five or later. The overall arcing thing here is the first five rounds focus on forwards. Not every single time, but overall, as I got here, 80% of the winners drafted their first goalie between round four and six. That's right around that people started drafting D and goalies. And out of the top three teams, so I was calling podium teams, the teams that finished in the top three, 81% of players chosen in the first five rounds were forwards. So among all teams that did well, almost everybody picked forwards in the first five rounds, 81%. So
I so desperately want to know if that 20% is entirely Cale Makar.
It is a lot.
You know, because I think this whole time I'm like, I can't wait till Raj is done because I want to ask him if Cale Makar is the exception of the rule, because dude is he's a forward. He is.
Yeah, well, the 80% that were not forwards were Cale Makar and Vasilevskiy. Those were a huge chunk of that 20%. And we'll finish that conversation on my next point about those two players in particular. But the overwhelming best strategy, again, there's always exceptions, but the overwhelming best strategy is focus on forwards early. that's just really, really clearly the answer. So
I like it. I like it. Considering that's what I try to do, I like that.
Going back to drafting, my next lesson is you got to draft for goals and power play points early. I mean, the roster turnover is huge, Raj. I came to you for this stat, but you know, you're going to retain most people in, you know, competitive leagues that did well, retained about 50 to 75% of their originally drafted team. So a lot, there's going to be a lot of roster turnover. You're going to be dropping guys. Guys are going to go Jeff Petrie on you. You know, things are going to happen to the point where you're going to have a core. You're going to stick to it. You know, the other 25 to 50% are going to be traded, dropped, what have you. You need to set yourself up with a good boilerplate roster constructed on what I'm calling a foundation of the hardest to find stats, in my opinion, are goals and power play points. That way, when it's time to cut bait, you got this bigger, you got a wider array of options to stream in. Whether you're playing in, you know, points league, categories leagues, if you have goals and power play points already set, you're going to get the most power play points from sturdy power play one players. And those are traditionally the best players to have even in a points league. So, you know, when you got to make those switches, you're dropping guys that are maybe, you know, fringe power play one, mostly power play two guys. And you're picking up for hits or you're picking up for a stream spot, what have you. Set yourself up with that good foundation of goals, power play points. That's my lesson. Retaught to me this year.
Yeah, you can always stream in hits and blocks and stuff, but it's pretty rare you get a Nazem Kadri type of year.
Yeah.
You know, where a guy comes in with that many points. I mean, I know Zach did draft him in a league or two, but
yeah,
for the most part, he was a waiver wire player, and that doesn't happen very often.
Number one, those type of players are few and far between. And second, you're one of 12 players, GMs in your league, or one of 16 or one of 8 or whatever, that have the option to go pick that guy up. So when you set yourself up on this good foundation of goals and power play points, you're reducing the risk, at least mitigating the risk, that you're not going to be the one that goes and picks up the Nazem Kadri first. So you definitely want to draft well and just be safe about it, I guess. And being safe, drafting for floors, goals, power play points, that's the lesson.
You should always wear a condom when you're drafting. I do.
I know.
Which brings me to my next point. There's plenty of fish in the sea.
I swear you had the same one last year.
Because it's right. And I want people to trade with me. Maybe that's why. Maybe it's just a subconscious I'm trying to get people to trade with me. Because I want people to not be afraid of trades and really embrace trades where everyone wins. You know, and then lastly, to also go along with that, if you're doing trades and stuff like that, know the status of your team and which direction you want, you know, your year to go. If you know you're in a rebuild, stash picks. Get as many ones and twos as you can manage. If you know you have a team that can compete for it, act like it. Go out and buy that championship. Fuck them picks. Just be all in, whichever way you go, worst possible place to be. And just like in real life that we said earlier, worst possible place to be is just out of the playoffs. Or even worse, just in the playoffs, but you're playoff fodder, where you make it into the playoffs and you might as well not even set your lineup because the guy that you're playing against is just running house.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Swap that roster because you already have a good foundation of goals and power play points. So you're set. I'm with you. Who's up next, Raj?
I'll give her a go. Yeah, the one thing we've been talking in and around it a bunch already, but it goes along with directly hand in hand with the earlier point I made, but the best players are not usually necessarily the answer. Like, you can kind of assume, I already said, no one who drafted first overall won, which basically means no winning team with Connor McDavid on it. And then you see Draisaitl was on a couple of winning teams, but he was going in the 2-4 slot. And as you get closer to the middle, you know, guys like Matthews, McKinnon, who are taken more in the 3-6 range, they showed up on winning teams. And this is one thing I am going to release. I need to do a little more work on it, but I went through the top about 100 players went through and saw how many winning rosters they actually showed up on. And man, yes, yeah, no McDavids, but the winningest, most successful players this year among all these leagues were those round two, three, four, five steals, like Jake Guentzel. JT Miller was huge. Zibanejad was huge. And then one that we've kind of got shit on in the playoffs, but Burakovsky was on the most winning teams of any player that I went through, which he is the type of guy that you need to look for, though, right? Like, is he
depth, right?
And that's where you make up your difference, right? Like, I got JT Miller in like late fourth round sometimes, and he ends up in the top 10. Same as Jake Guentzel always gets faded for some reason. When it came to D, it's just, you got to avoid that hype. You got to avoid the fucking Vasilevskis. You got to avoid Cale Makar. He's probably the best D in the league, but he's also the most overhyped D in the league. He was on zero.
He's expensive.
Zero. Yeah, that's a better way to put it. He's expensive. Victor Hedman, on the flip side, was on the most winning teams for defensemen. So was Dougie Hamilton, which it's just
how weird. Is that just a fucking coincidence, Raj? Like, it's has gotta to be. It's got to be just a, you know, one of those freaking outliers. I see you have all these believable names on here, and then you have Dougie Hamilton.
Yeah.
How?
That's just the numbers. That's exactly the kind of one where you need to be paying attention to hockey, right? Because by the numbers, just the stats I was looking at, he's in the top of the list, but not because of him. That was despite him.
He had 8 power play points all year long.
Yeah. But guys like Letang, who go far later because everyone thinks he's old and he just does the same shit every year, gets very little respect for it. And then, of course, Mo Sider, because he was incredible. And
because he was not drafted at all.
Exactly.
And people got to pick him up for free and get a ton of points.
Yeah. And then for goalies, it was the same thing. It was the middle of the road goalies who were pretty predictable, but don't go for the Shesterkins, don't go for the Vasilevskis, because you're going to overpay. But it was Demko, it was Jari, it was Saros. Those were the big three on by far the most teams. And then Freddie Anderson did quite well as well, because he got faded pretty hard in a lot of drafts. But overall, the biggest thing I learned from all these things, most things are pretty logical. Like, there's no real surprises in that list. It may be Jari, but you know he's going to get wins on Pittsburgh. You know Demko was going to play a lot. Saros, you just knew was good. When you chase those big winners like McDavid or Makar or Vasilevsky, very unsuccessful. Definitely. And then the other thing not to chase, I know it's a long one, but is rookies. Rookies are exciting as hell, fun to collect in hockey cards, great to watch, don't do much for your team. They're great streamers, don't gamble. Like, look at Lafreniere, look at Jack Hughes in his first season, look at Kako in his first season. Like, these guys are not, they're not worth it.
Paging Shane Wright.
So if I have the first overall pick, I should pick Jake Guentzel then, yes, instead of Connor McDavid, right?
Dougie Hamilton. Easily.
That's definitely what you should do. That's the thing to take away from this, I think.
All right. So my last lesson here is kind of twofold. Consistency is key. Now, that's like the broad strokes label that I'm putting on this one, the title. But basically what I'm going for is you kind of already talked about in the last lesson here, but you're drafting for floors. You're being safe with most of your picks. Yeah, we're going to gamble in the middle rounds. That's when we want to get those guys that we like or that we have a feeling about. But, you know, ultimately what you want to do is just look for consistency, you know, like huge falls for guys like Nikolai Ehlers that I was really, really excited on. And I'm going to try and temper my expectations with these guys that I really like that are going to wind up in the top five rounds based on one good season. When you're in your draft, you're setting up that foundation. You want to do it safely. You know, we're not taking gambles on the foundation. We're taking gambles in the middle rounds. You know, then I'm looking at the New York Islanders as a whole team. They seemed very safe. And one of my lessons last year was get the tandem. And the tandem I was talking about was the New York Islanders. That, Jesus, that would have went really poorly. And in our next lesson here, I learned something new again. You know, everybody thought the New York Islanders were a shoe-in for the playoffs, and consistency in scheduling here. Now, they started the year on a 13-game road trip streak thing while their new arena was getting built. It finally got built January 21st, 2022. Now, the first half, they had 32 games in 100 days. And then the second half, they had 49 games in 101. And, you know, us as fantasy hockey guys, we're drooling because there's four games a week. There's five games a week. We're like, oh my God, go for the New York Islanders all the time. Volume, volume, volume. But that volume is adding up on the human being that's on your fantasy team.
Yeah.
These guys are getting tired.
Breaking down.
They don't have... I mean, the New York Islanders specifically are a very old team. Parise, Chara, like these guys are not doing practice on their one day off a week. You know what I mean? They're resting. They don't get a lot of practice. Things like this start to snowball on a team. So you have to be cognizant of how this volume starts to add up for the human beings that are on your team. You know, that much volume and that much time is going to be super tough on a body, especially a body as big and old as Zdeno Chara. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, you start to see all that volume and you think it's going to be a good thing. But then the New York Islanders, that's one thing altogether because they're low scoring. And then that's a very perfect example because they were hard to stream from anyway. But it kind of just made sense to me that after a while, volume starts to hurt when we're talking about games played. There's no days for practice. There's no days for rest and practice. So you're kind of just stuck behind the eight ball for a long time. And us as fantasy hockey nerds are like, you got to go for the guys with the most games. And sometimes it's not right. So I'm going to keep an eye out for that this year and try and be on top of when guys might be fatigued just due to this volume that we're trying to go for.
Like it.
Number one consensus lesson, and then I want to breeze over some people on Twitter that that learned some stuff this year too. And one guy, Chirpy, actually agrees with us. It's fuck goalies. So the number one consensus lesson for the second year in a row is to fade goalies. Who wants to kick off the rant first? Raji, take her away, bud.
I think it's halfway between Zero-G and Vasilevsky. Like you were just saying in your last thing, consistency and being a little more logical makes sense. Like, I don't think you need to fade your goalies till starting in, you know, round 10 or 11 or 12, but you also don't need, if you need to look at the stats there, you don't need to go first or second round on a Shesterkin or a Vasilevsky. So yeah, definitely I would say fade goalies 100%, but I don't. Our buddy, who is the namesake of the Zero G, revised his strategy a little bit, which I think is a little more in line. Like, I think the way a lot of people took it was too hard. Like, fuck goalies altogether. In terms of the Zero G status, we were kind of all rough estimating, you know, like after round 10 for goalies, we'd consider Zero G. Nobody, I think one person won out of 23 leagues who took that strategy. I think it's important to have a decent goalie, but because of how volatile they are, I wouldn't risk much on it. You can go 70 places later in the draft, which is like five or six rounds. The difference between Shesterkin and Demko is like 60 or 70 positions in the draft for three extra wins. Like, is that really worth it?
Yeah.
I don't think so. And in fact, after what we've been talking about, I know it's not.
Oh yeah, I did I took our top 10 goalies in five hole leagues and broke them down, got averages there on average. So I want to say this, 9 out of the top 10 goalies in our five hole leagues had more than 30 wins and none of them played less than 52 games. So going back last year when I said, you know, just get the tandem, and me saying that, you know, if you go back and listen to it, it was mostly just frustration with goalies. Like, I didn't want to think about it. I just wanted to take a team's goalies, plug them in and forget about them. I'm looking at four of our top 10 goalies going past pick 100. That's Markstrom, who is third, finished third in our leagues. Jari, who is sixth. Demko, seventh. And Bobrovsky, 10th. So I think the important thing, if we're doing the fade goalie zero G strategy, is we're finding this value. We're finding goalies that are going to play volume. On average, between these 10 goalies, they had 58.3 games played, 35.4 wins, a 921 save percentage, which is going to be hard to draft for. You can draft for volume, but the save percentage kind of hit or miss. ADP, 69.03 ADP for the top 10 goalies. So we're looking at right around that round 7 mark, I think is where we need to adjust the zero G line. You know, at least on the five hole podcast here. But, you know, fade goalies, I'm aiming for round seven-ish and trying to find value. Like, there's going to be a Markstrom next year. There's going to be a Jari. There's going to be a Demko. There's going to be a Burrovsky. And it might even be these four goalies based on the performance in the playoffs for Markstrom. Bobrovsky might just get faded again. Probably not. But, you know, Jari, Demko, they might go past round pick 100. Who knows? Finding that value is important.
My whole thing with the zero-G concept and fading goalies, which I am all for, is that doesn't mean that you have to pick no goalies. That doesn't mean you have to have, you know, Casey DeSmith and Brian Elliott as your two goalies on your team. That's not what fading goalies means.
Right.
It just means not using, you know, your first couple of picks. You're not using your first or second round pick. Like, all of you that drafted Connor Hellebuck in the first round or second round this year, how'd that work out? You know what I mean? That's exactly what happens. How many times, TJ, this year did I pick up a win just off the waiver wire?
More than zero.
Now, I'm fine with having Brian Elliott, but okay, so you're telling me Brian Elliott is going to play for, you know, he's playing on the Lightning, and then he's going to get the, you know, the Columbus fucking Blue Jackets? Yeah, I'm down for that stream. That's how you can get your wins. You can have, like, your main goalie. You can draft Thatcher Demko at 102.9. You can draft, you know what I mean? You draft him 103rd overall and then fill in some stuff. Or you can have still have your two goalies, at least two starters, and then fill them in. I can't tell you how many umpteen times I actually probably picked up more goalies this year than anything. And I was stashing wins. I was stashing wins and stuff like that because you can pick good matchups. They're out there all the time.
So the marquee goalie pickup this year was Ville Husso. And let's go back to the playoffs here. Ville Husso really struggled. Jordan Binnington did very well in a small sample size, got taken out by injury, and then threw a water bottle at Nazem Kadri because God told him to. But what do you guys think? What's the duality of Husso and Binnington next year? Like, that's, there's going to be a question mark there. I think if we pick the right goalie, because of this question, I think both of them might go late. And if you get the right one, I think right there is where we start value.
Don't they have to make a decision on Binnington?
I think he's still locked in.
Okay.
I think he is. Yeah. I think right there is where we kind of start to value goalie talk.
Yeah. And, you know, it does depend on the league too, right? If the league goes on an early goalie run, sometimes you have to get in there. It's, to me, it's if it's early or late, like,
yeah, you have no choice.
You have to get a decent goalie. I mean, that's just one thing that we've seen. It doesn't need to be a top tier goalie. I think that's the real value of the fading goalies slash zero G is just like wait, but don't fuck yourself because
yeah, I don't want to get stuck with Corey Schneider. You know what I mean?
I mean, this year I've obviously invested in Demko. I literally had him in every single listener league.
That worked out really well.
And it worked out, but that's also because, like, I knew he was going to get volume. Everybody thought I was overdrafting him because I'm a Canucks idiot, but he's a great goalie. He knew he was going to get volume. So I looked there, and on the couple of leagues I won, I had him and Anderson, which were great value finds way later. And then the other league that I won was Demko. And then I had Mike Smith, which I got later, which I subbed out for Husso.
Mike Smith had a fantastic end to the season, though.
He had a bunch of, yeah, I actually got him back at the end of the season.
He had a bunch of shutouts and shit at the end of the year that was like, that were right during playoff time. That was clutch.
Yeah. The round isn't as important as just being aware. Make sure you get somebody decent. And then you can probably find your second goalie on the wire, like, or get somebody decent that's you're going to plan on subbing out, because there's going to be a Ville Husso. There's going to be, maybe it's always St. Louis. There's going to be a Binnington. There's going to be an Ottinger who's going to show up, right? So
yeah,
just don't waste your capital. I love him.
I like him.
So it was actually Brett E. Kingslayer on Twitter that said, fuck goalies. Chirpy says, pay attention to the playoff schedule, particularly the semis. Stocking up for the finals when it means a weak schedule the previous week could make the difference. And I just want to take another moment to suggest that everybody, when setting up your leagues next year, moves it up a week. Do not play fantasy hockey in the last week of the season, please. Please, please, please. But on Chirpy's note, like, I'm not drafting for playoff schedules, but I'm starting to make moves around the trade deadline for a playoff schedule, depending on where my team is. I don't want to get locked into not being able to drop players because I drafted them, because I need them for the end of the year, and then wind up missing the playoffs because of it. So trade deadline is when I'm making those moves.
Yeah, and even there, I would say, like, as boring as it is, like, just don't overdo it. Like, I saw some people this year, like, destroying their teams to get, you know, to maximize games played, but at the expense of, like, dropping some pretty good players. So I think with any of these things, like, keep your head on straight at the same time is whatever advice you're taking. Like, also, as Zach said, watch some hockey and pay attention to what you're doing, right? That's pretty
important. Turns out that watching hockey might actually help you play.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's good for your fantasy hockey season. Yeah,
crazy.
It's good for you. It's good for your team.
Literally, there's free homework on every night.
All right, TJ Stats says that this year taught him that Jason Robertson and Rupe Hintz are two of his favorite players in the league. So that's, yep, that makes sense. Just Ben has something to say about Zero G that we kind of outlined here. You can't take it to the extreme, right? You can't draft goalies your last two rounds of the draft just because you'd rather have, like, Andre Burakovsky in the 13th, you know? So, like, be smart, find your value, go mining for goalies, and take them when it makes sense. There is a threshold for value.
And you know what? Just because we haven't said it, it's probably obvious, but pay attention to the amount of goalies taken in your league. If you're in a 12-team league and everyone's takes two goalies, you know, that's a lot different than if you're in a 12-team league with three goalie starters where you need three, because all of a sudden you're crossing that threshold of getting into having to have backups and tandems and stuff. So I think that's a really big part of the goalie situation is, like, how many total goalies are getting picked in that league?
And what's the weight? What's the weight of goalie scoring, right? If, like, goalies are super important to your league, zero G is kind of a swear word. You don't want to say that shit. Like, you need goalies because they are that big of a part of your league.
Yeah, and then you're left with a bunch of crap, and there's that guy that drafted, like, yeah, four goalies, and you have to go groveling.
Oh, man.
Like, you know.
Please, sir, I want some more.
I have some more goalies.
Or, like, in Heinze's league, he had a guy pick up, like, five, what was it? It was, like, eight goalies. He maxed out his goalie spots just because he was an asshole.
And then just sold them off, I'm sure.
No, he just held on to him like a dick.
Oh, well, that's even worse.
He didn't do shit with him. Yeah, he was like, well, maybe I want to keep Eric Schallgren. You know, maybe I want to keep him. Real dick move. Our buddy Jay Har said, ultimately, it boiled down to learning to maximize roster moves weekly, add games, swap out bottom of the roster players for streamers, add games, give yourself a shot at adding points or stats to a category, live on the waiver wire. And he's right. Streaming is, this isn't fantasy football, right? Like, this is fantasy hockey. Streaming is a much bigger part of this setup than it is in fantasy football. So streaming makes or breaks a team. You need to max out. You need to use all your streams. Like, if you want to go the distance, like, you really need to pay attention and stream, guys.
That was another note that I have on this list, which I'll post, but I also noted, like, how many transactions winners made. Almost every time, the 1, 2, and 3 were also the leaders in transactions. Sometimes what happened actually quite a bit was the person in second place would have more transactions than the person in first because they were trying to catch the person in first.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a combination of, like, I have the list in front of me here. I'm looking at teams who had one who kept 71% of their original drafted team, but also led the league in transactions. So you're drafting well, and you're making shitloads of moves with those waiver wire guys. So
it's a role model right there, guys. Really is.
Way to go, Jay Har. Good comment.
Atta boy. All right, that's it for the season premiere, I guess it is. So I hope you guys are digging it. Hit us up on Twitter if you got anything. Be sure to find the Fantasy Hockey Discord, because we'd love to have you there. So next episode, we're going to be doing a Keeper League mailbag, which is going to be really exciting. You guys are going to hate it in the Discord, but I am going to at everybody. So get ready for that. I'm sorry about the one notification that you're going to get.
Start spreading the news.
I am taking all keeper league questions. If your keeper league, you know, runs until, like, you don't have to set your keepers until right around the draft, which is the way it should be.
Yes.
You know, based on trades or anything. If you already have your keeper leagues locked in, talk to your commissioner, because that I don't like that. I don't like that. But yeah, hit me up with your keeper league questions. If you got 9 guys that are worth keeping, but you only have 7 spots, you're the kind of people we want to talk to. Send in your questions to us at FHF Hockey. Do it in the Fantasy Hockey Discord. We're also going to be looking at our rankings lists and seeing what went right, what went wrong. And then we're going to be doing the Fantasy Hockey Awards, you know, the Fantasy Heart, the Fantasy Vezina, things like that. So, Raj, I know you're really excited about that one. So, look forward to that. We're going to be hitting you back on Thursday. We'll catch you next time. We love yous.
Love you.
Love you.